after you. Hands at 10 to 2, are you the spinning wheel as it starts to roll? Or the tall ship on a summer lawn until the yaws are red.
Beautiful music this morning. Darling Side, they're going to be at the Egg tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, an indie folk band from the city of Boston. And they will be in the city of Albany tomorrow night, and we'll be hearing their music throughout the breaks, the ins and the outs of the program this morning. So we thank them for helping us out, and hopefully they'll have a lovely crowd there at the Swire Theater in the Egg tomorrow night in Albany. Now, let me introduce the panel to you. We have a great panel, and I am thrilled they are all here. We have a lot to talk about, and we welcome your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She was here yesterday. She's here today. How you doing?
Oh, I'm just so delighted to be here. Never better.
you look good. Did you talk about your maladies yesterday?
There was some discussion of my right paws.
All right.
And for the few who haven't heard.
You know, she broke her arm while she was out for a run.
She's looking up at the moon.
In the dark. I wanted to see the super moon. It seemed like a good idea.
Can I recommend walking next time?
I love running.
But not at
I asked them if I could run. I was also hoping to run a race this Saturday. There's a wonderful race in Albany where you run through the city and in the lights in the park.
I bet they told you no.
They absolutely said no, I can't do that.
You can walk, however.
I said, can I do that? No.
Here's an idea. I'll bring you around in the car.
It really is. I mean, they do a great job. It's a wonderful fun run. So, but I will be. I will not be running it.
Kingston Freeman, publisher emeritus, who seems to have all of his limbs intact. Well, Ira Fussfeld is with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Well, you know, it helps when you don't do a lot of exercise. It seems to be less chance of breaking bones.
That's right. You don't. We don't have to worry about that, do we?
Of course, we may drop dead from other things at any moment. You know, I'm so happy to see that her arm's in a sling, because now it would take an extra minute for her to beat me in an arm wrestle. But
Well, it's good to see you. Vera Acarius-Kelly is here. She is a professor at Siena College, where she teaches young people about comparative politics. And we are thrilled that she is with us this morning. Thank you very much for being here, as always.
Well, it's wonderful to be back once again.
Thank you.
She's not only brilliant, but her middle name makes her the best name on all of organized radio. I mean, I love to just say it.
Vera Acarius-Kelly?
Yeah, it's an unusual name. I agree.
That's good.
You can find me.
Is this an organized radio here?
Yes.
What is Acarius? What is the heritage of Acarius?
So it's it is most likely my family name of several hundred years ago was Eckhart, which was a more German name, like an E-C-K-A-R-T. And then somebody in my family Latinized the last name to a double C and an I-U-S ending to sound more educated. Or something like that. So when you see some of those Latinized last names, it was a change in family names.
Oh, wow.
So I know you're going to be away for a few weeks on winter holiday, but you'll be back at the start of the new semester. But so we're going to miss you, but we're glad you're here today, and we'll look forward to when you come back.
Sounds great.
Thank
Thanks.
You very much. Alan Chartok is here as well. Good morning, Alan. How are you? Good. Excellent.
Mm. Well, you know, I just made a little mistake. I set, when I'm tired, towards the end of the week, I set the alarm for a little later than usual, and it was 3:30. but for some reason it rang at 2:30. Now, I'm assuming I set it for 2:30, but I got up, I got dressed, I got ready to go, and I looked at the clock. I said, what?
Well, I would say that waffles. Either at 2:30 or at 3:30, I'm sorry to say, what?
So you whipped yourself up a big plate of bacon and eggs and all the greasy fat
food.
With
toast and jelly.
No, instead of using the ISDN thing we have at the house, which with David Gustina, which I always do at 4, I just got in the car and did it live here from
the studio. You go. You know, next time you could just go out and take a run and look at the moon.
It was beautiful last night. Did you have snow in
the
house?
We had a little flurry.
Yeah, it was lovely coming in this morning. It was just a little,
reminder that it's winter.
I hated it.
Well, it wasn't damaging.
Not that you curmudgeonly this morning.
No, I hated it. I want snow. I'm not ready for snow.
Well, it wasn't real snow. It was just aesthetic snow.
Snow was coming to town.
Listen, I was in California for the last 3 weeks. The last thing I want to see here is right now is snow. Although the second last thing I want to see is fire, which is pretty
good. Oh, my God.
Imagine L.A.? L.A.? Yeah.
And they had what they
fire?
Called a purple warning, which is the highest wind warning.
Well, I 4:30 in the morning on Tuesday, we were driving from the valley to the airport to come home. And 24 hours later, you probably saw the pictures of the exact spot where I had driven with the Getty Center sign, which is on fire on both sides of the road. It's just frightening.
Which is a somewhat common occurrence, but the because of the breeze, because of the and because of the ferocity, this has been going on both sides, and I don't I'm trying to get more information about the Getty itself, because they've been fine as protection. They had an opportunity to move all of the art out of there, and they said they were not going to do that, which I didn't quite understand.
The LA Times had a good story about it. They have an air purifying system in the Getty, and the buildings themselves, because they're concrete, are safe, and the air purification is such that it would not that the best place for them to be is inside the building. By the way, our colleague Rosemary Armeo, who apparently has found her way from Jordan back to the U.S., she Facebooked that she is in Los Angeles and was looking to go to the Getty Center yesterday, and it was closed. And I wrote her back that I had been there on Sunday. Mm-hmm. If the fires ever end and if you ever get out there, highly recommend the Getty
Center. It's a beautiful it's a beautiful place with a beautiful view and an okay art collection.
Yeah. Okay. What did God say to Noah? I believe it was not water but fire next time. One wonders about that.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the animals.
Yeah, okay. Sure
that's, I think that's the
maybe
extent
I got that
of
quotation
my conversation.
So my sister-in-law actually lives in the LA area, and she also mentioned in a text yesterday that it's not only the Santa Ana winds, but the dry. Underbrush.
Yes.
It hasn't rained there for a long time.
And I believe the humidity was in single digits.
And so what they're worried about, obviously, it's a sign of climate change. And she says, climate change is real. It's time for our policies to be adjusted. And of course, that doesn't seem to be high on the agenda.
Well, the mayors, the governors, they're on board.
Of course, but
we're just missing one component.
Yes, we're missing an essential component here.
I think Michael Bloomberg is our president on the issue of climate change. Mm.
God gave Noah the rainbow sign, no more water, the fire next time.
I was pretty close.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it there, Alan. All right.
Alan.
Let's move on to our religious scholar, Alan Chartok. Thank you very much.
America's pal, I heard yesterday.
Let's go to, what is Al Franken going to say in a little while? Al Franken is pretty much lost all of the support of his Democratic colleagues. Strangely, he's getting more support from the Republicans, who have their own issues on this matter. However, the Chuck Schumer, Kirsten Gillibrand, and many other senators came out and called for the resignation of Senator Al Franken. He is expected to speak at some point this morning. We're expecting, I believe, around 10 o'clock, although a firm time has not been said. There was a story that was released by Minnesota Public Radio that said that Al Franken would be resigning, and his office called them and told them to retract that story because it was not correct and that a decision had not been made. There is some question as to whether he will step down and resign, or that he will wait until the ethics board comes out and with her investigation, and the ethics committee and comes out and does their investigation. This all, of course, got sped up as a sixth woman came forward. The most concerning thing about this particular story, as I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe it was the first story of sexual assault or harassment that took place while as a senator and within the confines of Washington, while it was by a congressional the victim a congressional staffer. So what do you make of this? I'm going to ask you, Teresa, first, because I know as late as last week you were saying that you still thought that there was a reason for him not to resign.
Yeah, I'm still not sure on this one, in the sense of whether I think that there are degrees of problem, and if in fact she's, you know, I believe them, but I know some people say no matter what you do. I think what I'm most focused on now, I'm really so pleased about the Time Magazine Person of the Year choice, about the fact that, you know, people are finally coming forward. And now I think we really have to focus on what to do, how to give people the tools to for victims to protect themselves. How do we give people who have been enablers tools to not feel pressure to enable? And how do we provide more attention so that predators don't do that? So I think Al Franken's going to go. I think there's so much pressure for him to leave that I think it's interesting to have somebody like the Mitch McConnell say that he needs to leave at the same time that he says it's okay for Roy Moore to be Senate, you know, to come into the Senate, or the fact that he doesn't denounce Donald Trump. So I hope that all of the people who are urging Franken to leave, I think it's inevitable he's going to leave, will those Republicans and Democrats will join in a chorus about Roy Moore and others.
Joe, if I may be permitted, we have one letter here from Patrick, who says, "What a petty party of Puritans the Democrats are becoming as they railroad Al Franken out of office without due process. This teaches politicians and men one lesson: deny, deny, deny. Do we not believe in contrition and forgiveness? Al Franken should be allowed to prove that he is a good man."
So can I say something to that? Well, first of all, I think Al Franken will resign. Al Franken must resign. And the question is not about what we will be doing just for, you know, protecting women, but the future in public service has to focus on the rights of women as equal citizens. And the idea that, you know, men get to apologize publicly, and then it's fine for us in general to assume that apology is accepted. How about asking the women that were affected by his conduct and see if they would accept this apology? Because at this point, when we have elected officials representing us and our voices, I expect them to behave according to my and the electoral standard of representing us in the best, most ethical manner possible. And anybody who oversteps that boundary must resign ASAP.
I don't disagree with a thing you just said. My question is what is the ramification and what comes out of it? And I realize that this shouldn't be the point, and I don't, hopefully it isn't, but what are the ramifications as a result of, because it seems that the Democrats here are doing the right thing. You see what the Republicans are doing, which does not appear to be the right thing. And I'm curious as to what that means for, well, to be crass about it, do the Democrats gain anything in this other than the moral high ground?
Well, I would say, number one, when you think about it, the Democrats have more women senators And they might get another woman senator.
Yeah, they're going to name
Minnesota.
They're going to name
right?
either the attorney general or the lieutenant governor. One of the two. Both of whom are women.
Lori Swanson will be the next senator from Minnesota, and I think the moral high ground counts in terms of upcoming electoral agendas.
With this president?
Oh, I think it's very important to sort of separate what Democrats stand for from what the Republican Party is working on in terms of its tax plan, disregarding, you know, sort of disadvantaging California and New York and New Jersey voters on tax-related issues.
It's an attack on education.
It's an attack on education.
Their tax bill is an attack on education.
But also in terms of the Roy Moore issue. Here's what I suspect. Which I hope he won't, but if Roy Moore wins this election in Alabama...
He will.
Well, I still have hope that he won't.
And if he
then arrives in D.C. as a female senator or as a Democratic senator, I would refuse to have him seated, or I would leave in terms of... I could not sit with somebody like that to collaborate.
Well, this is
going to be a big issue.
Can I just read you the first sentence of Patrick's letter to us, in which he says, "What a petty party of Puritans the Democrats are becoming as they railroad Al Franken out of office and all of that." Okay. And then the last words, "without due process." Without due process. Vera, does the due process issue trouble you at all?
Well, here's the thing. If you have one woman after another come forward,
we have a picture.
Yeah, and
we have the picture of the.
I feel like I sounded like I was for him, but he's gone. I think that we have to. Okay, he's going to go, and then my question is: so what's next? What do we do? This won't be solved just by a couple of high level people leaving. I mean, it certainly gets the conversation going. Yeah. But we need to have a fundamental change, and we need to have, I think, in the beginning of next year, begin to have more conversations about how to prevent this, what are the tools that people have. I mean, I think that he's gone.
But let me ask this question, because I think Patrick makes a good point, which is without due process. Well, Roy Moore is technically innocent until proven guilty. Now, with that said, I think there is enough evidence. I think there is enough there to believe that the man is a child abuser and a predator. Now, there is no due process there, but that's what I believe. I don't know.
And also we can say he has been removed from
what, twice or three times?
Court for lying twice, we know he's a liar.
We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We've been talking about Al Franken and the possibility of his resigning. He has announced that he will be making his remarks at 11:45 this morning. So we will know more, and obviously we'll be covering it fully on Midday Magazine this afternoon at noon with Brian Shields. Meanwhile, we have letters, and we'll go to some of those letters as we work through this and other stories.
Okay, and we heard from Rick. Good morning, panel. It seems that President Trump's speech was slurred yesterday. I heard that. during his announcement of the embassy move, particularly at the end of his comments. Do you think this indicates any health problems? And that's Rick. It may indicate health problems. I certainly saw it. A lot of people saw it.
I think it was chalked up to be dentures.
Dentures,
wasn't it?
Right. Yeah, denture teeth issue. Were falling out.
Yeah, could be dentures, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So.
I get it. Or it could be anxiety.
I'm more worried about the health and safety of the people in the Middle East who will be affected by his decision. Yeah. But I take their point. But I think he's poured gasoline on a fire.
Yeah, and it could be, I mean, in terms of his health, it could be exhaustion, too. I mean, he's not exactly, you know, I mean,
the picture of health.
The picture of health.
What Vera was going to say, I think, is he's not exactly a kid.
I mean,
you're guilty of ageism, aren't you?
I'm also not that youthful anymore.
We're going to say at the moment, like that. at the moment.
According to...
at the moment, I'm feeling rather unyouthful. I'm grading too much.
According to Corey Lewandowski's book, he eats worse than I do. I mean, he's in McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken. What was the third? It was another fast food. But that's his daily...
Was it two Big Macs?
Two Big Macs and two filet-o-fish.
Filet-o-fish, right. Yeah.
So, okay, ever the policy wonk, speaking of nutritious food, did you see that they cut the... nutrition programs
I didn't
finish
see it.
Michelle Obama, first lady, was very effective at bringing attention to the importance of nutrition, particularly nutrition in the schools and gardens and so on and so forth. She's very effective in doing that. And so yesterday, in their quest to erase all things Obama administration, they, in my view, lowered the standards for nutrition for food in the schools. You can increase the sodium content. You can add more sugars so that they can have flavored milks, that kind of thing. They rolled back the changes that she was able to get on the school nutrition program.
Let's go back to letters.
Okay. And so Bob says, has anybody else noticed that Trump hasn't found the time to even tweet anything about the tragedy taking place in California? Too busy with more important matters, I guess. Bob from Albany. And there is somebody who is not identified. It's Angela. Teresa, it may have been a supermoon, but Mercury went retrograde Sunday night, which can mean trouble getting around. Do be careful, you shining star, you.
And that's very sweet. Yeah, I thought it was the gravitational pull of the supermoon. It wasn't that I was a klutz. It was the gravitational pull.
And Danny says, the letter defending Senator Franken is ridiculous. It's not difficult to know that you shouldn't try and forcibly kiss a woman. Forgiveness is one thing, but consequences still need to be levied.
Yes.
I just wanted to squeeze in three points. The first one and the most important one is it's disturbing what happened to these women. There's no way around it, whether it's what Franken did to them or any of the others, many of which seem to have been more serious than what Franken did. But nevertheless, that's the one point. The second point is it's disturbing because Al Franken seemed to be a good senator, a conscientious senator, an up-and-coming senator who may have had national potential. Third, and this is where it's trickier, and the last time I was on the program, I was talking about Mark Halperin, and both Vera and Teresa took me to school, rightly so, about that case. I still believe and I'm not sure how I would draw it up. I'm not sure anybody would know how to draw it up. I don't think this should be one size fits all. I don't know whether or not the life of a Harvey Weinstein, which obviously should be ruined based on what he did, should equate to the life of an Al and career of an Al Franken, who apparently was a transgressor, and I can't defend it, but less so of a transgressor. So does he deserve the death penalty? Now, both of you may say yes, and I'm certainly willing to listen to that, but I'm just not sure one size should fit all. We're in a rush now to take care of these things and to clean our houses, and that's understandable too, particularly at the corporate and political levels, although the Republicans, as has been pointed out, seem not to feel that way, because until the president of the United States is taken for to task for what he is admitted doing, when we have tape and the guy is still in office, I'm not sure somebody like an Al Franken, who, again, what he did was before he became a United States senator.
Up until the last.
I haven't read the details of the last. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's mm-hmm. my point is not that they don't deserve to be vilified, but how strongly should this one be vilified versus this one?
So here's my point. How can Democrats honestly critique Republicans and the president if they don't clean their own house?
That's a good point.
Right now,
and I would add the media, too. The media is trying to stay above the fray. If they're going to be critical, they have to be more stringent.
So let's clean house and set new standards and do trainings and sort of set the expectations that women and men are treated equally and have equal opportunities and equal pay, and we actually achieve change, lasting change.
That's what I'm trying to focus on is how do you create not just conversation but actual change? How do you create a different environment in the lives of nurses' aides and secretaries and waitresses and people like that that aren't these high-profile cases but deal with this stuff every day, day in and day out? And what can we do to change, to get a conversation going, not just, you know, we're in this emoting phase and house cleaning phase, but if this is going to be create lasting change, we have to have a conversation about what are the tools people have, how do the processes change, how can, you know, people enable protection as opposed to predators. That's what I'm trying to figure out how to get to.
Well, we do have to remember, though, that women have the opportunity to listen and observe what happens on the highest political level now. So if you are working in an environment where you are being pressured, you're very well aware of what happens and how men in powerful positions are treated. And this might actually begin to encourage women to step forward and speak up on issues that they would not have dared to address in the past. So I think this is one of those tipping point moments that we should keep in mind.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's all healthy. But I do think Patrick's letter, which is being ignored, this first letter, in which he said one thing that I really agreed with is the due process issue. Ira hinted at it or said it. I think the due process, look, I'm getting a ton of mail as the head of the station about Garrison Keillor. And Minnesota Public Radio still hasn't told us what he did.
Very troubling. Same thing with these two guys at WNYC in New York.
Yeah, if you haven't heard, Leonard Lopate, their afternoon man, and
Jonathan Schwartz.
Mr. Frank Sinatra.
Mr. Frank Sinatra have both been
in addition
suspended.
To John Hockenberry.
Mm-hmm. John Hockenberry.
Yeah, that's right. And that was a couple of days ago. You probably missed that one, Teresa, while your arm was being
I did miss that one.
But the due process issue is the one that I think most men are concerned about. I'm getting a ton of mail from females and males about how ridiculous it is that they can't hear Garrison Keillor anymore. And I am being criticized because we severed relationships with him when Minnesota Public Radio did. And I was supposed to introduce him that night. And we said, no, we're not going to do that. So I'm as guilty of this as anybody else is. But the question then becomes, what if somebody is out there and makes an accusation that isn't true? In a court of law, you have a chance to get back.
So I...
Vera is making a bad... Her mouth is down, yeah.
So I think there is a distinction to be made between criminal offenses where you go to court, you go to the police for sexual assault go through the court system, and constant pressuring where, you know, you're it's a hostile work environment and those kinds of environments where We now find ourselves most often, especially in the Franken case, it's, sexual misconduct.
Sure.
It is now, we're now at the point where women actually dare to speak out. And they do need support structures where they can go to human resources department. There needs to be clarity in terms of training.
Agreed.
I just have a hard time with the issue of multiple women coming out and telling stories where you have patterns emerge. And when patterns emerge, especially when you're a public official, I think that is a real concern.
I've got to answer this one. So suppose, Vera, to put the shoe on the other foot, you're in your classroom. It's happened, by the way. Mm-hmm. You give an F to somebody or a D to somebody, and they come out with a scurrilous story about how you approached them for sex and that they said no. And then you are tarnished with that. You think it can't happen? It has happened.
Well, I mean,
female.
You would need a little bit more than, saying some story and I gave him an F. I mean, you have to have detailed stories of conduct that can be confirmed or they're similar stories. So, I mean, seriously, that's not how that works.
But if that happened. Can I ask a question? I'm sorry. Yeah. Just in this case, though, this is a case in this Garrison Keillor case, which I do find interesting because it's a he said, she said case. So far, we have only heard the he said. He has come out and has given his version of the story. Minnesota Public Radio, who is his employer, was his employer, and fired him, really hasn't given any details as to what the complaint was. So for the people who are involved in this, the stations, the listeners, the people who care, what is the obligation to give to tell the details, at least so it doesn't seem like, because they didn't even use the word sexual. They said inappropriate behavior. And since then, they have been fairly mum, only to say that you can assume that given our long relationship with Mr. Keillor and the large role that he plays, i.e., cha-ching, that it must be something, or we wouldn't have gotten rid of him. But I agree with you on all of these stories and the patterns developing. But what is the obligation for the side of those who are doing the firing to say, okay, these are the grounds that we are doing this on?
So I mean, I in essence agree with you. At some point, they should probably release some statement informing the public about what took place. However, at this point, I suspect that there's a legal case going on, some negotiation, because Garrison Keillor has, trademarked certain terms.
Right.
And I think there is a larger legal question in terms of, is there some kind of a settlement? Is there, so... I think we will eventually find out something, but they're not ready to do so because they're in the middle of legal wrangling.
But Vera, we're getting a ton of mail here about why can't we hear his program? Why can't we hear this every day? And by the way, the mail is saying, and nobody has told us what he did. And why should we believe this? Why should we just take somebody's word on it?
Although I do have to say, even his story was creepy.
Well, he said he put his hand on the bare back of a woman.
Yes.
So let's say that happened. Let's say it was an unwelcome gesture.
Which she immediately said it was.
And let's say it was the only one, because nobody else that I'm aware of has stepped forward. Does that mean he should be taken off the air entirely? Doesn't it mean maybe you get suspended for a couple of weeks? The example that Alan gave, Vera, regarding your an alleged case against you, you didn't think it would be
It wouldn't be credible.
Well, but if the school got noticed of this allegation, even though it was a false allegation, there's a likelihood that the school would put you on the bench until it could investigate. And you know what? Then the Times Union would find out that a college professor had been put on the bench for these allegations,
so,
and it's on the front page
tomorrow.
Can I
just say something why I wouldn't be put on the bench? Because we have set up mechanisms at institutions where we do not meet one-on-one with students in a private place. This is just not what we generally do. It's rare that I have my door closed. Oh,
but you also don't have sex with the students, so you could see a circumstance where that prohibition would be violated. In other words, if you're going to go so far as to have sex with a student, you're going to ignore the rule that says you can't go one-on-one.
That's a fireable offense, by the way.
Right. Yes. But and now we go back to Alan's question: what happens if you're entirely innocent?
And the premise of my story, by the way, my scenario was that she is entirely innocent.
Right.
So what I have to say about Garrison Keillor is that it is not likely that the only thing that he did was have his hand up a woman's back. That is not likely. He's a major cash cow. That is not what took place. There must be a series of incidents or stories that came together. We just are not aware of this.
I agree with you entirely. But if it just seems that there is some mishandling of this on the part of Minnesota Public Radio, who could say, as we work with the legal issues, even in privacy, to allow the privacy of the victim. Okay,
can,
fine.
Can you imagine the mail that Minnesota Public Radio was getting? If we're getting mail, you better believe that since they were the ones who did the firing, they are getting a tremendous amount of mail.
Joe, I think what you just said is really important, too. I listened to one of the congressional hearings on, you know, what to do next, how to change, and everyone's saying you need total transparency, total transparency, total transparency. And in theory, that's correct, but one of the experts who is an advocate for victims said, while that might seem fine, in some cases, the victim, total transparency for the victim, would be further victimizing him or her. And so, how do you thread this needle? How do you have total transparency and not further victimize, say if somebody has been raped or assaulted and they don't feel that they can talk about that publicly, so then they don't take a case forward because they know that it's going to be a public discussion. So those are really complicated challenges. And how do you do this? That's why I think we need a lot more conversation about what's next and how to, now that this has come out of the shadows, we need to figure out how to deal with these very complicated issues.
Agreed. I agree with you.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. And I want to obviously get to the Jerusalem decision and many other stories.
Taxes.
And taxes. Yes, Teresa, we'll get to you. Yes, Teresa,
no,
there
I mean,
is
I,
a tax
Teresa,
story.
Do you want to talk about taxes?
No, well, here's my problem.
Hold on. Tell me about your problem at the break, but I have to go. Otherwise, okay. We're not going to make the other break.
Let's take the break.
I can't be late for two breaks. We'll be right back after this.
We were always on our way, rolling up our sleeves. Ever moving forward in the tracks where we lived our simple lives, kept our blinders on, eyes to the horizon. I know, no doctor, but I know you can't live in the past, but the only way.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Darlingside is the music you just heard. They're going to be at the Egg tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, theegg.org. Let's move on to another story before we have to take another break here in just a few minutes. See, you get all backed up and then you have to make up for it. Donald Trump had for months been determined to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. We're seeing the effects of this morning with great unrest. And now, in his announcement, in the weeks leading up to his announcement Wednesday, recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, reversing decades of U.S. policy, Donald Trump heard both messages of for and against the proposed move from advisors inside and outside the White House. The decision to shake off warnings from senior officials such as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and align himself instead with prominent proponents of the move, including Vice President Mike Pence and major donor Sheldon Adelson, underscored the underscored the president's determination to break with past policy and keep a key campaign pledge despite the potential risks to U.S. interests in the region and the goal of Middle East peace. I thought that the words of Thomas Friedman, who wrote in the New York Times, who said, never has a president done such a big move and so much for so little in return.
It's not the first time either. He's the great art of the deal. He's proving to be a horrible negotiator. I can't now, on the top of my head, remember whether he did a deal with another country where he didn't get anything. Might have been China. I'm not
the
sure.
The correct quote from Thomas Friedman: I've never seen a president give up so much to so many for so little.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, do any of us in the room believe that Donald Trump knows anything about this? About the decision. I mean,
about the Middle East. He knows
about
nothing.
Middle
about the
East,
consequences
about Jerusalem.
Of his decision.
Well, is it a possible error? He doesn't give a damn.
I think it's possible.
In other words, the only thing he cares about is Sheldon Adelson and his money.
Yes, I think he's.
And the evangelical voter base.
Right. Yeah. He's paying off a campaign promise. One of the questions in my mind is, to what extent, if at all, does Chuck Schumer have a sway on him on this decision?
Well, the Times, the papers have been very clear on that he did lobby. Mm-hmm. At least that's the accusation, that he did lobby that this decision get made.
So what did he promise Chuck in return?
What did you say?
What did he promise Chuck in return for his support?
I don't know promise anything. In other words, I think that the issue, and Vera is our international relations and comparative politics person here on our little panel, but I don't think he had to promise anything. I think it was his campaign thing. He got the signal from Schumer that I'm going to go along with this. That was all that you needed.
Yeah, but if Schumer not only wants this done, but says to Trump, I'm not going to give you a hard time about this, what are you going to do for me on the tax bill or on some other policy that they're negotiating?
Maybe nothing.
The closing of the government in a few days.
Vera?
Or maybe DACA.
We'll see.
Yeah. DACA could be it. But for me, what is most astounding is the fact that Trump did not really think of the idea of Jerusalem being the prize in a peace negotiation between Israel and the Palestinian population and the Arab world. That was always left, the decision over Jerusalem was always left as the final issue to be discussed because it was the most pesky, complicated, and emotionally wrenching issue. And he simply decided to give that away. So what does he have now to negotiate over? And Kushner, he's supposed to come up with a grand negotiation over the peace negotiation with Israel and the Palestinian populations. I mean, that's out the window now. We will see, a further complication of what we are seeing. And what we see is an emergent struggle that will intensify between Iran and the Shiites and the Sunnis. And I think that's a battle that President Trump is clearly losing because now he has lost credibility throughout the entire region. And even his Sunni allies in Saudi Arabia have criticized him over this one. Not a good move.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Vera Acarius Kelly, Ira Fussfeld, and Teresa Bourgeois. It is a pleasure to have you with us this morning as well. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. I was just taking a inventory during the break, and I felt a little hollow inside. I felt a little bereft. I felt a little just deprived of something, and I realized it was a discussion on the tax bill. So,
what tax bill?
So, should we start with Paul Ryan, who talked about spending yesterday and says that Republicans will target welfare, Medicare, Medicaid spending in 2018, that Republicans will aim next year to reduce spending on both federal health care and anti-poverty programs, citing the need to reduce America's deficit. We're going to have to get back next year at entitlement reform, which is how you tackle the debt and the deficit. Ryan.
You know, have a swig of that stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
What happened to me earlier, too.
Yes. Frankly, it's the health care entitlements that are the big drivers of our debt. So we spend more time on the health care entitlements because that's really where the problem lies, fiscally speaking. Ryan said that he believes he has begun convincing President Trump in their private conversations about the need to rein in Medicare, the federal health program that primarily insures the elderly. Alan, or
Alan, you, go first?
You want Teresa or Alan?
You wanted to talk about the
always
tax bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just didn't want to. The government will or will not shut down tomorrow, right? They're negotiating today. They're probably going to kick the can down the road another 2 weeks. So the goal, as I understand it, for the Republicans is to be able to do the budget bill and the tax bill at the same time so they can pay off people to support the tax bill so that they'll put goodies for them in the budget bill. But they have now said publicly what we have all said for a long time, Ryan and others, that they're going to give tax breaks to corporations and the wealthiest of Americans. And to make the numbers work, because the math doesn't work the way it is right now, they're going to cut Medicare and Medicaid and perhaps Social Security. And just remember, when you cut Medicaid, they talk about it being for the people who need to go to work. And why are they on Medicaid? Why aren't they just going to work? Well, the very significant number of the people on Medicaid are people in nursing homes. They are children or adults with multiple disabilities. And so we are trading tax breaks for the wealthiest of Americans are going to be paid for on the backs of people in nursing homes, children and adults with multiple disabilities. And is that what we are as Americans?
So what do you think is going to happen over the next 24, 48 hours?
I think they get the continuing resolution to December 22nd, which is unfortunate. And then I think that they're going to try to resolve the tax bill and the budget bill, push them both through just before Christmas. I don't know how this tax bill can possibly go through, but it might. People need to speak up. I mean, there was an interesting analysis this morning that reinforces that this tax bill is really an assault on education. You have the loss of tax deductions for people who are graduate students doing research. Barry, you might know about this, but you have this new provision in there that it's going to allow tax deductions for parents, wealthy parents who send their kids to private schools are now going to be able to get additional tax advantage, yet they're going to do this SALT, the state and local tax, which is going to cut into funding for public education.
And not only that, Teresa, they have also, they're so bloodthirsty at this moment that they have now been leaking all over the place that the next targets are going to be Medicare and Social Security. Right. And that from nobody lesser than the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Which really astounds me that they released that publicly, because you would think that their voters would be outraged.
I think they will. I think
Marco Rubio talked about this last week at a Politico breakfast. But are people going to be up in arms?
Oh, and they will.
They say, no. Well, we're going to attack welfare. But they're describing Medicaid, you know, for people. These people need those people need to go to work.
No,
those
you're absolutely right.
Need to get
you're
a
absolutely
job.
Right. You're absolutely right. About Medicaid, they are convinced that population that needs Medicaid will not come out and vote them out of office, or that they're so gerrymandered that they can't, and they don't care. But Medicare, that's another whole situation. There's one thing in this world that would get me with a pot and a pan and a drumstick out in the streets, and that's messing with my Medicare or my Social Security.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty arrogant approach to sort of mention this publicly and assume voters are not, especially older voters, aren't going to respond to
it. Well, with great pride. You know, it's well, this is what's causing it. We're going to fix the problem. They haven't said how they would do it. In other words, it seems to me it's been floated for years that at the very least there is agreement that Social Security is in trouble, and if it's in trouble, we need to do something about it. But what I've heard them say they want to do is not eliminate it or not change the benefits for people who are currently getting it, but it is to delay the age at which you can begin getting it.
Well, I would argue that till the moon comes out.
Because which part?
Whatever part of the moon. I would argue that that there are going to be
supermoon.
Young people who have been putting money into Social Security and Medicare via their paychecks and everything.
Are you calling me young?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Well, compared to me, you're young. And therefore...
is that a backhanded
comment?
Go ahead.
No. But I think this is a losing proposition for them, and it is generated by arrogance in the success over this tax
but
bill.
A lot of this is hard to undo. If they are... this has got to be stopped before December 22nd because, I mean, they are sending us on a path that we've been down before. This was, you know, this is the Reagan tax cuts, which everyone has forgotten. You know, they've been painted as something positive. But the first couple years, it was devastating to the economy. It was devastating to average working families. And then they had to come back with increase, with tax increases. But this, how can they get away with, I mean, Orrin Hatch the other day complained about how unfair it was to use tax dollars to fund the children's health program.
Yeah.
9 million children since October 1st, the funding for the children's health program, it was a bipartisan program. By all accounts, it's working very well, lowering health costs, providing preventive care, keeping people out of going through the emergency room, which is the most expensive thing. Yet, on the one hand, he's going to give tax breaks, multi-million tax breaks that'll go to people like Donald Trump. And on the other hand, as a country, we can't afford to provide health care for the poorest of children
in
this country.
It's really disturbing when you think about Orrin Hatch's comments on children. I mean, I just am repulsed by these kinds of arguments. This is the future of this country.
And
young people need children. And mothers need access to health care.
And if you said, okay, we need to plan ahead. We have, you know, the baby boomers are retiring. We have fewer younger people paying into the system. We've got to deal with the math of these entitlement programs. That might be credible if at the same time you weren't pushing through a massive transfer of wealth from working Americans, working class Americans, going to the top 1%. And that's what, by all accounts, that's what this tax bill does that they're going to try to pass by December 20th.
And here's what's interesting about it. Most people know it. And we see it in the polls. 29% of the people polled in the last poll approve of this tax bill. Think about this. This is going to be the signature.
They disapprove of the tax bill.
No, 29% approve.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry.
No. But I'm thinking that... this is supposed to be the number one thing that is going to get Trump reelected, that I did this. We're proud of this. This is a singular achievement for us, and 29% of the country approve of it, and going down, not going up,
but,
because people are getting the idea that they're getting screwed.
But they also have polls that show 44% of Republicans don't trust the media, so that the stories that are going to be coming out between now and next November that describe all of the ills of the tax plan to working men and women who might be inclined to support Republicans, they may not believe any of it. It's all fake news.
Let me argue with you, Ira, which is not untypical of our relationship. But I'm saying right now that the news media doesn't play into a poll, a national poll, which shows 29%, only 29% approve of this tax bill, and the rate is decreasing, not increasing. So soon you'll have 20%, and that doesn't mean a thing about what the media is going to say.
So 70% oppose it. The constituents oppose it. but the contributors. I mean, and people say, right. And I agree, that in many cases, Trump is not the negotiator that he's, brought to be. But in this case, he has negotiated himself and his family
exactly
an incredibly lucrative deal. He has been part of negotiating a multi-million dollar tax break for himself and his family.
And his donors.
And his donors.
He's got exactly what he wanted, and he doesn't care that people are throwing Molotov cocktails in the streets of Israel.
But so California is key. New York Republicans and California Republicans are key on this, House members. And a number of, Republicans in New York have opposed it. But what about those California Republicans? They have jointly signed a letter today that's supposed to go to the Congress because of these fires. They want increased funding to deal with these fires. Well, are they going to be for these tax cuts? Because the tax cuts are going to not devastate FEMA. There's not going to be money for FEMA.
The answer, my friends, blowing in the wind.
Blowing in the wind.
But here's what I think. I think they are going to be for the tax cuts. No matter what happens, they need to be, because it's their donors. They're going to get primaried if they don't. We know that by a more conservative Republican. They know it. They're signing this letter, but they're not going to sign off on the tax
cuts. So how do you drain the Treasury and at the same time come and say the federal government needs to help?
That is the question. Okay, we have 5 minutes. Let's go to some letters.
Okay, here we go. I'll read them fast, okay, because we have a ton of letters. Panel, cutting back on education? We just voted in the stupidest man as president in our history. Can you imagine who will be voted in as president 20 years down the road? And that's from Anthony. Alice says, was it Susan Collins? Was it Susan Collins who said she voted for the tax bill because she was promised they wouldn't touch Medicaid and Medicare? Great panel, thank you. Brucey says Hockenberry in this diversity show abused and drove out three of his co-hosts, all women of color. The abuses and subsequent death of their careers is a death penalty these women endured. Tip of the iceberg. A big reckoning is needed. Vera, the scenario described by Alan, the one about the female being falsely accused, actually occurred at my college. The Title IX hearing was biased, and the adjunct professor was gone in capital letters. No appeal. And that's from Augusta, parenthesis, female.
Okay, all I can say is thankfully at my institution, we have very well-established policies, and I trust the process entirely and completely. So all I can say, Siena College is stellar. Okay. When it comes to this issue.
The double standard, says Tracy. It does seem strange that Franken has to go, but Moore may easily be elected. Then what does Congress do? Molly says, while I sympathize intensely with Israeli desire to have Jerusalem as the capital of the nation, can we forget that Bears Ears has historic and religious value to Native Americans of the area, yet the current occupant of the White House has no difficulty in giving it away? Isn't there any equivalency here?
Remember the Pocahontas comment?
Yeah, sure.
Right into that one.
Bears Ears is shameful.
And Nancy
says,
what office does one go to get one's reputation back if the accusations are fabricated? Al Franken knows if he's guilty. If he's not guilty, is it the right thing for him to resign, Nancy?
One's reputation is not taken away by just one accusation. I would say one's reputation is built on a lasting experience with colleagues, friends, peers, and that really is not going to be torn down by one false accusation.
I think it could. But that's all right. I mean, I think your reputation can be severely, and I've seen it happen, severely influenced by somebody making a false accusation, one person. But anyway, Sue says, very necessary discussion occurring this morning on the 100th year of women getting the vote. Could we begin fundamental change by passage of the Equal Rights Amendment? And that's from Sue. And we didn't. We came close to having an Equal Rights Amendment in this country. But there were an awful lot of women who voted against it.
But just remember that Roy Moore, if he is elected senator, a senator will be elected who does not believe that women should hold public office.
What, do you want me to argue for Roy Moore?
Roy Moore, does not believe that Muslims should hold public office, and he does not believe that women should hold public office.
Here's a guy who was thrown out off the bench twice. Forget all about the sexual stuff. He should not be a candidate for his own history on the bench.
He made some bizarre remarks about 9/11 being punishment in this country.
Sandy Hook.
It's just disturbing.
So Earl from Athol says, in Franken's case, have we forgotten the hysteria that led to the death on neighbors in Salem, Massachusetts? Should we not wait for legal action? And we heard from Jeremy. Isn't the sexual harassment issue the point Muslim men make in defense of the burqa and hijab? Men are too weak not to be distracted by women not covered up. Could it be that the person who wrote this has got his tongue in his cheek? I don't know.
Well, we had the same conversation a while ago about Vice President Pence and not wanting to have a meal or be in the same room with a female staffer, right? That's also one of those strange things. Like, you can't follow certain standards. You can't treat a woman
personal
the same
behavior.
Way. It's just like,
you're responsible
what do you...
for your personal behavior.
Yes. All right, we have a minute.
Hello, panel. As a man, I call for my gender to step aside. It's time to give females the reins of power. Not that women are infallible, but by percentage and impact, the missteps made by female rule will be minuscule compared to current and past power brokers. And Michael says, I would like to know what Al Franken did. How can you make a judgment without knowing the details?
Well, we do know Al Franken.
We know the details.
Yeah, it's Garrison Keillor that we don't know the
details
on.
Susan says, Sue, hi, yes, Al Franken is a jerk, but driving out of office just seems to be like handling yet another seat to the Republicans. That would be far worse for women as a whole. The chipping away of women's rights is on their agenda.
The
make
seat
it a
will
sentence
not
and no
go
more.
To a Democrat. The seat will go to another. Will not go to a Republican. Will go to a Democrat because the governor of Minnesota is Mark Dayton, a Democrat. He will appoint a Democrat to replace Franken when he steps down.
Some will argue this will help save the seat.
Good morning. Franken should be allowed to defend himself to those women who claim violation like this most recent one. Just what did he do? Is it the so-called victim up to the so-called victim to define? Is this just a plant by the Bannon Republicans? Due process is overdue, and that's from Jerry.
And for our final letter...
John says, your panelists just repeated the lie so often told in the lazy press that Al Franken has admitted that the allegations against him are true. Actually, Franken has consistently, repeatedly disputed the allegations. Stop doing Roger Stone's work for him.
Incorrect. Franken publicly apologized for several of the misconduct accusations. The one that he has disputed is the most recent one and some of the details.
Okay. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody who wrote in. My thanks to you for listening, and I wish you a good morning. We will be back right after this.